time for today's community comment. 12:32 at WBEV. We head over to the Daily Dodge TV studio, the Slumberland Daily Dodge TV studio. And here is Kevin Haugen along with Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff, and good afternoon. Welcome into today's community comment. Again, I'm your host, Kevin Haugen. It's my pleasure to welcome into the Daily Dodge TV studio our guest here on the third Wednesday of the month is Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt. Sheriff, thank you so much again for coming in today.
My pleasure. The last third Thursday, from what I understand.
Yeah, well, we got some things are going to be in changing, but we'll be sure to make announcements of that in the future, but for right now, still third Wednesdays, and news coming out here in the last recent couple days here with the sheriff announcing his budget stuff, and we'll talk about that here in just a moment here on Community Comment. We're going to be talking about ICE, both physical and more of the
federal agency.
Correct. Yes. So yes. We'll have a lot to discuss here with Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt here on Community Comment this afternoon. If you have a question for Sheriff Dale Schmidt, you can call into the program at 885-4446, or you can text 887-9595. Again, to call in is 885-4446. If you have a question for Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt, our guest here on Community Comment this afternoon. And Sheriff, I think it's a good place to start talking about with the current weather. This past weekend.
Yeah.
It was. Days just kind of blend together this time of year for me, so a month feels like a year sometimes. But this past weekend, we saw a number of different incidents happening here out at Beaver Dam Lake. A couple of snowmobilers, UTVs, I believe they were also going through the ice there on the lake. And it's been a relatively milder winter here in Wisconsin, so the ice isn't as thick as it has normally been in years past. But Sheriff, what is your agency seen, and what are some of the things that we want listeners to be aware about if they're venturing out on the ice, and ways to keep themselves safe? And again, I think the message that we always keep hearing is no ice is safe ice.
That's very true, and really the temperatures have fluctuated this year again. In the last couple of years, we've seen that where it's been cold and then warm. In December was really cold. We had some warmer temperatures in January, but the real big difference this year is the lack of snowfall, lack of snow cover that we have had here in Wisconsin here in January. Okay. Normally in January, we get a lot of snow cover, and we just got our first real snowfall cover since December, just in the last week. It was Beaver Dam Lake was for a while. You could see where all the ice was. You could see where all the open areas were, and there are still some open areas on the lake all through the winter. You know, depending on currents, depending on snow cover, a variety of reasons, the portions of the lake stay open, when we got that snowfall here in the last week, made it really difficult to see where the open areas were on the ice. And this last weekend, we had several snowmobiles, particularly going through the ice on the south end of Beaver Dam, in an open area that we know is open. Lieutenant Brian Lowe was dealing with it all weekend, put out a press release, put out a map. If you need to see that map, you can find it on our app, on our Facebook page. I'm sure you posted on Daily Dodge and didn't see it, but it's out there. To find out where that open area is, and that is the first part of it. But a couple weeks before that, we had about four or five vehicles go in Beaver Dam and Fox Lake because of the warmer weathers, so it's been challenging with vehicles on the ice this year. That's only going to get worse next week as we get back into the 40s again. Yeah. Next week, so there's some phenomenons out there with the formation of ice when it melts. And then it freezes again and melts and freezes again. It can be known as honeycombing, which makes the ice very unstable. So not only do you have the open areas, but you've got honeycombing. And really what I recommend is if you're going to go out on the ice, you need to talk to somebody who knows that lake. not just somebody who knows ice, but knows that lake and knows it well. The bait shops are a good place to go. Fishermen who are out there regularly have a good understanding of what the ice is like. Talk to them and ask them, what is the ice like? Where should I stay away from? A lot of people just go out on the ice and think, oh, it's going to be good. I'm just going to cruise across the lake and I'll be just fine. And then all of a sudden their snowmobile is in the water. So it is dangerous out there. One thing that I recommend is if you're going to go out on the ice, regardless of what you're in, don't go alone. Have a buddy with you. Have somebody with you that if you get into trouble, that they can call for help. They can help you. Because if you go in by yourself, it's very hard to find. We've had a number of times this year where we've had Beaver Dam Fire go out with their hovercraft trying to find individuals out there by themselves. And a great tool to have out there with their hovercraft. But it takes a while to find people. And if we have somebody out there in that buddy system, it's going to make things a lot easier, a lot safer for everybody involved. We want you to enjoy the winter sports, but we want you to do it safely. So just number one, know the ice. Talk to people that do. Go out with somebody and then make sure you're properly equipped. You know, make sure you've got some good waterproof clothing is a good idea, just in case you go in. Water resistant, I should say. Nothing waterproof, but do your best to keep yourself safe and don't do anything dangerous.
I realize the irony in saying when I initially said we were dealing with a mild winter, but the last couple of days it has been anything but mild outside with the colder temperatures. And it can be kind of deceiving when we get these cold blasts in for a couple of days and people think, oh, the lake is going to freeze up and it's going to be a bit safer for me to venture out and travel on a body of water like this. But it takes more than just a few days like this for a lake, especially like Beaver Dam Lake, or if you head to Fox Lake as well, for those bodies of water to freeze over enough where it is safe to traverse it without having concern of there being an open spot where your vehicle can fall through and be in a situation like we saw this past weekend.
And lakes, just historically, most of the winter, there are certain areas of lakes that are just typically open for a variety of reasons. Sometimes they freeze over completely, but there's usually some place in the lake that is going to be open, and you got to be careful.
And Sheriff, you brought up another good point as well, just reaching out to professionals like the bait shops as well. Like, we host a show every Friday, Wade does, with local bait shops, he calls them, and gets the ice updates as well. Yeah. So that's a good opportunity to listen to that every Friday as well. But also letting people know what you're doing. And, you know, if you're going out on the lake and taking a vehicle out there, just letting a family member or a friend know, hey, I'm going to be out, that if something happens and they don't know where you are, they don't come back, or if an accident happens, that, a rescue can come quicker than if you don't tell somebody where you're going.
Nothing is lonelier than being out on the lake or in the lake by yourself and not having anybody there that can call and help to get help for you. And that's why it's so important to make sure somebody is with you, people know where you're at, because those lakes, it can be fun, they can be dangerous very quickly, and when you need help, you need it right now, not 2 hours from now.
Yeah, and you mentioned being geared up and prepared, getting water resistant gear. Is there anything else when it comes to any sort of safety equipment or things that people should have on them if they're going out on the lake that they should package up?
A really important piece of equipment. They're not expensive to have with you that you can put on your body when you're going out in the ice are hand spikes. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in the ice, trying to pull yourself out is really, really hard. And for some reason you're in the ice, if you're able to get to your hand spikes, put one in each hand and pull yourself out with those hand spikes, that's one piece of equipment. There's other equipment out there as well. That you can look at. I'm sure you can go down to Fleet Farm and find all kinds of different options. Just having a plan. If for some chance I fall into the ice today, how am I going to make sure that I can get out safely? You have to plan for it. You never want that to actually happen, but it happens every year. And I would rather have people be prepared for it than I'm in the water, now what do I do?
Yeah. I know the... maybe the answer to this is would vary depending on the situation, and each incident is different. But is there something that law enforcement or first responders recommend for somebody who finds themselves in the unfortunate position where their UTV or snowmobile falls through the ice and they're in that position where they cannot get themselves up on top of the ice again and they're stuck in there? Is there ways to make sure they stay alert and they don't pass out because of the cold? Are there certain things to keep in mind if they find themselves in that position?
Well, the first thing, the most difficult thing to not do is panic.
Yeah.
Once you panic, you're putting yourself in a horrible position. You're going to. It's human nature. You're going to panic. But finding a way to calm yourself down, look at your surroundings and find ways to get out. If you have some of those tools on you, like I talked about, the hand spikes to pull yourself out, being able to maintain your composure that you can find them and pull yourself out, it's going to be tough. It's going to be difficult. But maintaining a calm demeanor is going to help you rather than losing it and losing control of your emotions. That's going to make it much more difficult. Certainly looking around and see what your environment is around you. You know, one thing with Beaver Dam is it's not all that deep. Mm. Putting your feet down and seeing, can I reach the ground? Can I reach the bottom without keeping them up in the air? You don't want to lose your traction, but those are a couple things to think about, and it really depends on what you have. It's hard to just give a blanket, this is what you can do, yeah. Because it's very difficult. But staying calm, know your surroundings, how deep is the ground underneath you, if you can figure that out, and making sure you have that buddy system, that's the number one. If you got somebody else there that can help you, that's where it's really going to benefit you.
And if somebody does head out on the lake and they come across, and fortunate enough to not fall into the ice, and they come across a spot that is open water, or maybe this, you know, the day before it looked like it was safe, and the next day there's something that, you know, changed with the weather, that some ice cracked and broke apart, and now there's this open water in the lake. Is this something that you recommend reaching out to either, you know, the local fire department or Brian Lois with the Dodge County Sheriff's Office and reporting, hey, we have this situation. I just want to report it, making sure that, you know, whether or not it's through, you know, certain channels of communication, that this information can be shared with other people so that they are aware of this.
I think the easiest way, if there's something that we need to get out to the public, that something is dangerous, the easiest way for you to do that is either call our dispatch center, but even easier, download our app and just go right on our app and file an incident report and let us know that that's going on. We can get it to the right people, notify those people that something's going on. And that's really easy. You just type a few sentences in the incident report, tell us where it is exactly, give us a GPS coordinates if you can, that'd be great, and then we'd be able to get that information out to the public, and I think through our agency is probably the best means to do that, because we have a lot of followers around the county and we can really push it out, get it out to the news media if there is something that's dangerous.
Fantastic. Again, we're with Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt here on Community Comment. The phone number to get into the show this afternoon, 885-4446. We do have a caller on line one. Let's head to the phones and say welcome to Community Comment.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Doing well, Tyler. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. I don't know if Dale Schmidt can answer this or not, but I was heard two different. Is it true? I'm not sure if you can answer this, though. Is it true you can survive in cold water than you can warm water?
It's a good question, and you're right. I can't answer that for you, Tyler. I would think that talking to somebody in the medical field, or maybe a paramedic, might be a little bit more equipped to answer those questions. I'm pretty good with the law, but when it comes down to the effects of cold and hot on the human body, I'm not an expert there. So I would check with more of a medical professional on that.
Like I said, I wasn't sure, and I do tell people when they buy alcohol, stay out of Dodge County when you drink and drive.
There you go. Good job, buddy.
Thanks for your service.
Take care.
All right, thanks, Tyler, for the phone call. Again, the number to get into the show, 885-4446, or you can text 887-9595 if you have any questions for Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt here on Community Comment this afternoon. I can tell you that it depends upon how hot that water is, but if I had the choice between falling into ice-cold water or warm water, I would choose warm water over ice-cold water.
Every day, absolutely.
My personal preference.
But warm water on the coast of Florida would be fantastic right now.
Could go for that right about now as well. I agree. Again, our guest, Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt. Let's pivot now from talking about ice to talking more about ice, but
perfect,
in a different capacity now, and that's with the federal agency. And for those who maybe aren't aware, the Dodge County Jail houses or homes is the place for federal beds contract with ICE. But maybe just set the stage for this conversation here. What is ICE, and what's the relationship with the Dodge County Sheriff's Office there?
Sure. So ICE is a division of the Department of Homeland Security through the United States government. And most people have an understanding. ICE is the Immigration Customs Enforcement Agency. There's a lot of... I was actually looking at the DHS website, there are, I want to say it was something like 24 different entities that fall under the Department of Homeland Security. ICE is one of them. U.S. Customs and Border Protection is another one. There's a bunch of agencies. It was very interesting reading. Maybe for somebody like me, maybe not everybody else, but I was so the relationship that we have with ICE is really on a several different levels. First of all, I want to preface this that I will work with any federal law enforcement agency and assist any federal law enforcement agency as they need assistance here in Dodge County. And that goes for the FBI, the ATF, the U.S. Secret Service. We saw that last fall. And includes ICE, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, all of those agencies. I will work with them because they're a law enforcement agency, and we cooperate with all law enforcement agencies across the country. And as such, I also need to make it very clear that I cannot enforce any federal law that is passed by Congress in Washington, D.C. That means that if the FBI has a human trafficking case that crosses state lines and there is a federal law that forbids that, I can't enforce that law. I can assist them. I can go with them and be their backup and help with interviews, but I can't make the arrest. I can't put somebody in federal prison. I can't even take them to federal court. I can't do any of that. DEA, federal. If there's federal drug charges, I can't charge somebody federally for a drug charge. Same thing with ICE. The laws that ICE are enforcing, the federal immigration laws, I am not able to enforce. I can't arrest somebody for that. I can't take them to court for it. I can't do any of those things because that is a federal government responsibility. I can assist them and do assist them and will assist them just like any other federal agency. And that goes for any sheriff, any police chief. We do not have the ability to enforce federal law, period. I think a lot of people have that misconception that law enforcement is going to go out to a domestic abuse incident and just because they have an immigration detainer that I'm going to pick them up. No, that's not how it works. I may arrest somebody and take them to jail on the domestic abuse incident and then notify immigration that, hey, this person is in our jail, but they then have to come to the jail and serve the civil immigration warrant to put that hold on them. So I think there's a lot of confusion out there about the federal government's role and the local law enforcement's role. So hopefully that helped clear it up a little bit for those in the public. We don't go out and search for people that are that have immigration detainers. But if ICE comes and says, hey, we're doing an operation, will you assist us? Will you provide a transport van or something? Yeah, we will. Absolutely, I will. Because my job is to hold people accountable for violation of the law. And whether people like it or not, people who are here in the United States illegally have violated the law. And I will work with other agencies to enforce the law. That's what I'm sworn to do, to uphold the United States Constitution and the Wisconsin Constitution. Now, we also have a little bit more interaction with immigration here in Dodge County, but I don't have a contract with immigration. I hold immigration detainees under a contract with the U.S. Marshals Service. So my primary contract is with the Marshals. We house Marshals inmates on federal crimes at the Dodge County Jail. That contract was put into place well before I was sheriff. The jail, in fact, was built with contracting in mind because it costs a lot of money to run a jail in any county. And the thought process was at the time to, if we house inmates from either state corrections or federal corrections, we can charge for that and we can offset the cost of the county jail, which we do. And at the end of the day, we save the county taxpayers about $2 million a year in additional funding that isn't necessary. If we only housed immigration, or if we only housed our county inmates and we didn't do any contracting, it would cost the county taxpayers a couple million dollars more a year to run the sheriff's office. So that's why the contracting is in place. Once I had the contract with U.S. Marshals Service, or Sheriff Nails actually was the first one to have this contract, once that contract was in place with U.S. Marshals Service, since the time under Sheriff Nails, we have also housed immigration detainees in our jail as well. And so we have our average right around 180 contracts per day. Right now we're at about 200. We're at the point where we've told immigration, no, we can't take any more. U.S. Marshals, no, I can't take any more. I'm full. And when I say full, it's a relative term. It's not completely full because I still have to have beds available should we arrest somebody here in Dodge County. I still have to have room to move inmates around within the facility should I have disciplinary issues that I can't house two people in the same pod anymore. I've got to move them around. Behavior type issues. So I'm not full in the sense that we have 358 beds and they're all full. That's not the case. But I am full in that I can't take any more contract beds because it wouldn't be safe to do so. And so we're real careful about that. And so how that process works is when they have inmates or detainees to bring to the jail, we transport, they pay us to transport. They stay in our jail through their adjudication process through the courts. And then when they're done, they take them out of the jail. And that's how that process works.
Sheriff, when it comes to these federal detainees, what's the average stay time that they're in the Dodge County Jail? Is it a couple of weeks, a couple of months? What's the average time before they are eventually moved out?
You know, I don't have the average time, but it does span anywhere from a few days to months and sometimes even a year or two, depending on how that adjudication process. Sure. And I can't control the speed of the federal courts. We all know the federal government runs slower than state government, and state government runs slow. Sometimes it takes a while. I will say that the speed in which the federal government is working right now has stepped up a bit. So that's we are seeing more people come and go than we had in the past.
Sheriff, you mentioned that there's the contract exists to house these federal detainees here at the Dodge County Jail. Is that a contract that is something that is renegotiated on a yearly basis, or is this something that extends out for a certain amount of time, then is then revisited before it expires? What does that setup look like?
And I called it a contract. I should actually call it an intergovernmental agreement. It is. It's a contract, but it's an agreement between the sheriff and between me and the federal government to house these inmates, and we negotiate it. We can't negotiate it any more frequently than every 3 years. There's a clause in that you can't do it any more frequent than that. In the past, prior to my administration, it had gone many, many years before any renegotiation took place. When I took office, we were at $70 a day, and I've renegotiated. I'm on my third reiteration of contracts now, and we are up to $100 a day to reimburse for our cost and offset those costs to the taxpayers. So every 3 years, I believe we're in year two of the current one, so it'll be a couple of years before we renegotiate again. But we're in a really good spot with the last negotiation, jumped us up $14 a day, or $14 per bed per day, and also increased our transport rate. We really did a good job of negotiating a better deal for the county.
Now, just going back to sort of the local side of this, more in case of if you're investigating something and you discover that a possible suspect has a federal warrant or some sort of tie to the federal government that they're wanted in that capacity, but they did commit a crime on a local level. How does the jurisdiction work between, you know, what supersedes the other? Is it, you know, locally they are taken into the jail and are facing the local charges first, and then it transfers to the federal level, or is the federal level step in first? How do those two civil entities exist when it comes to charging a potential suspect?
A lot of times it's very similar to if you have multiple counties that have multiple charges and who gets them first. They actually kind of run hand in hand many times. Let's say I arrest somebody, we'll just use a robbery, and the federal government also has something, a human trafficking case on them. They'll probably come into my jail and sit in my jail during my adjudication process because I made that initial arrest. They they are in my jail or my custody until we get those charges taken care of. But that federal charge or other county charge can happen at the same time. They still go through court. If they have a court date that comes up, we transport them to the courthouse for their hearing. And then when they're done with the hearing, they'll come back and stay in our custody. And then once the charges are all adjudicated, then they make a decision on if the sentences are going to be consecutive or concurrent. Consecutive obviously means one after the other. So you get done with my sentence, then they get transferred maybe to the federal government or another county, or concurrent, where they can serve their sentence at the same time. And then they just work that out between the courts. Now, as immigration is related, that's a little bit different animal. They're not supposed to be here in the first place. I haven't really figured out how that all works out yet as far as immigration. Do they have the ability to pick them up and take them out while they're still pending charges? Things I'm still learning. I thought I knew quite a bit about the immigration process before this year. I'm learning a lot more this year and working through some of those things. So I don't have all the answers, but what I've told you so far is generally how things work.
We're with Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt here on Community Comment this afternoon. We have to take a short break. More Community Comment is coming up next.
And now, without further ado, back to Community Comment with Kevin Haugen and Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt.
Welcome back into our second segment of Community Comment this afternoon. Our guest here on the program this afternoon, Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt. The phone number to get into the program again, 885-4446. Or you can text 887-9595 if you have a question for our guest, Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt here on a Community Comment. We want to thank Jeff for a last-minute switch and a bumper music here coming back in from break. Ties more well into our first segment, which was dominated by ICE, both again the physical actual property of ICE and then the federal agency ICE, still kind of fits a little bit in, actually segueing into our next first topic here in our second segment here. The first topic we'll be talking about here, but again, if you have a question for the sheriff, you can call in at 885-4446 for Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt. And again, as I mentioned, sort of ties in a little bit to what we talked about in the first segment with more or less to do with the jail. This is now switching to the state component here when it comes to the Department of Corrections. I know that just a couple days ago, dominating the news cycles, the governor obviously last night made his budget proposal. A big part of that was his plans for the Department of Corrections. And also we have a city just north of us here in Waupun that has several state prisons located in it. I know, Sheriff, it's been a topic of conversation, at least in a couple of community comments, with the investigation that was done last year at the jail and that whole press conference and the news that broke there. Your recommendations for ways to address the issues that were being faced at that facility. But I know you sent out a press release the other day just sort of going into a lot of detail about your reactions to that proposal from the governor and just how you see that coming together and your concerns about that. But I hand the mic over to you, Sheriff, and just kind of summarize for us here on Community Comment just your thoughts looking at that proposal and just some of the things that you see that are concerning to you.
Sure. First of all, I've had people ask me, why does this impact the sheriff of Dodge County? And I want to start there, if I could. Why does this impact me? Well, first of all, I investigate all crime that happens within the four institutions that fall in Dodge County. Waupun Correctional, Dodge Correctional, John Burke, the minimum security in Waupun, and then Fox Lake Correctional. So I have staff. I have a full-time detective that's pretty much all they do is investigate crime in the prisons. And then my other detectives fill in and assist with the bigger cases or when there's a heavier workload. And we do about 300 investigations a year on crimes within those prisons. That's the first part of this, why it's relevant to our agency, why it's relevant to our citizens here in Dodge County, because we have more prisons in Dodge County than anywhere else in the state of Wisconsin. Secondly, the proposals that Governor Evers made impact public safety. And that's why it also affects me as the sheriff, because public safety is pretty much what I do. So we want to make sure that the plan the prison comes up with isn't going to negatively impact public safety. Certainly last year, the investigation that we did, the arrests that we made, 9 arrests, including the warden, made an impact with the governor's office, and I appreciate him taking seriously some of my recommendations, particularly looking at Green Bay Correctional and Waupun Correctional, the two oldest prisons in the state, and recognizing that they cannot continue to exist as they do today. They are not safe for inmates. They are not safe for staff. And when you're looking at Waupun Correctional, it falls within Dodge County. That is a safety concern for me. It should be a safety concern for the governor, and that's why it's important that we do this right. Now, I'm not opposed to the potential capital. By capital, I mean building changes that the governor is looking at for Waupun's purposes. Changing Waupun Correctional to a minimum medium security prison would certainly benefit my agency, because we would have a lot less crime to deal with, because a different category of inmates. However, closing Green Bay Correctional and not replacing it makes a problem that exists within the not only the prisons, but the jails throughout the state worse. Right now, as it is today, the Wisconsin Department of Corrections is 5,400 people above capacity. And if you close Green Bay Correctional, you eliminate 749 beds. That's another 750. In 2 years, it's projected that we are going to be 6,400 above capacity in the prison system. And so total, you add that plus Green Bay Correctional, you're looking at 7,150 they don't have space for. So jails around the state are asked to contract to hold these individuals because they don't have space. Above that, there's a national standard. It isn't a requirement, but a standard that our jails, like we talked about a little bit earlier, is you really need to maintain your jail or your prison at about 85% capacity for the safety of inmates, the safety of staff. And if you're not doing that, you're compromising safety. And our prisons are all well above. For example, Dodge Correctional, which isn't part of any of this, has a capacity of 1,100, but they're holding about 1,400 to 1,500 right now, well above capacity. That's not good. So to get down to 85% where you should be, we really need to have space for another 9,000 inmates. And so cutting and removing a prison just makes it worse. There's a lot of conversation that the governor had. I've been speaking with the Secretary of Department of Corrections because the secretary is the only one that'll talk to me. The governor doesn't have communication with law enforcement typically. It's a sad fact, but I've asked many times for personal contact, and short of telling him that his warden is being arrested, that's the only time he ever talks to me. So I've talked with the Secretary of Department of Corrections, and he's been very good. I really like Jared Hoy, great guy. We don't always agree on everything, but we can have good communication. In fact, when I sent him my press release, he said we can disagree, but it's great that he and I can have a good conversation. So I really appreciate Secretary Hoy. But as we're going through all of this, I'm trying to figure out and work with them on how are you going to eliminate that many people to compensate not only for the 749 beds you're losing, but then for the other 8,000 beds that you need to gain so that you can have safe facilities around the state. And their process is putting people through the early release program, which I'm not opposed to looking at the early release. I know they've had some success with it, but you're not going to get that many people through that early release program to be successful and then stay out. Keep in mind that our recidivism rate in Wisconsin, about national average, is about 38%. So for every 100 people that are released through that program, through that early release program, 38 of them are coming back. You're not going to get those kind of gains. We do need to have social workers and mental health workers to help out with things. But we're not going to see those kind of gains to get us where we need to be and close a prison. It's not safe for our staff. It's not safe for correctional officers in these facilities to continue to run as they're running. And when I talked with Representative Bourne a few years ago about this, I asked him, what is the possibility of the governor working with us to get some of these prisons replaced? And Representative Bourne told me, the governor's position is he won't build a prison because it will upset his base. That's not the reason why you don't do something. We are in a dire position right now in the state of Wisconsin. We need to have room for inmates who are adjudicated and sentenced by judges. This isn't something that people are just willy-nilly put in jail because the cops don't like them. They go through the criminal justice system, and a judge oversees their conviction, and then the judge sets an appropriate sentence. And that's what's frustrating about all of this. And then on top of all of those other things, probation and parole. And we could have a completely other topic on probation and parole. I want to say that all our Department of Corrections staff are fantastic. Our probation and parole staff are fantastic. But our probation and parole system is broken. It is flat out broken. And it's not because of staff. It's because of staffing, to start with. You think about a probation and parole agent, and really to be able to manage individuals who are out on probation, you need to be able to supervise them. And really to do that effectively, one probation agent to about 20 people max would be ideal. You could have meetings, you could monitor them, you could see what they're doing, you could check to make sure they're not doing things on social media. But they're at one probation agent to 75 to 100 minimum. They can't manage their inmates or their staff they're supervising, and they're frustrated by it. They have no time. They don't have enough people to do what they're doing. And then on top of all of that, they're handcuffed by the policies of this administration in Madison because they won't let them revoke people when they do something wrong. They are so frustrated because people are breaking the law, they're violating their conditions, and they're not being allowed to put them in prison where they belong, put them back in prison. That's what the probation and parole is for. If you violate, you go back. And so I have talked to people on probation, personally talk to them, and you know they'll talk to me. They don't tell me necessarily what they do, but I say I've asked them because I wanted to know, what do you think about the probation and parole system? And they said, well, I can get away with pretty much whatever I want to, and that they know that because we are not being supervised. It's not the fault of the agents. Some of the agents are pretty tough. I know that, and it's great. They work really hard. But especially Madison and Milwaukee, they don't have the time to do what they need to supervise these people. And the people who are out on probation and parole are gaming the system. It's broken. They know they can get away with doing whatever they want. They know they can go out and drink. They know they can go out and commit crimes. And they're probably not going to be held accountable unless law enforcement catches them. So it really is too bad. Judges continue to put people on probation. And I don't think even the judges understand how broken our probation and parole system is. And accountability, if you know me, you know accountability is big when it comes to law and order. If you don't have accountability and people just know they can run and do whatever they want to, they're going to continue to do that every single day. So I just don't think his entire plan is well thought out. I hope the legislature works really hard to come up with a plan that does work, that includes renovating or closing GBCI and WCI, that includes some good social programs for them to help people get back on their feet, to help overcome addiction, but also make sure we maintain safety and gives resources to our probation and parole agents because they just don't have support and they need it.
Yeah, you know, this is another topic that we've revisited several times when it comes to correctional officer positions and just how understaffed prisons and jails have been over the last couple of years. I know there's been initiatives to help, you know, get raises and you know, help retain employees and at these facilities. And is this something that, you know, obviously, I feel like a lot of times you always just point to, oh, the answer is money. You just throw money at a problem and you hope that it fixes it. Is that a place to start with parole and probation, or how do we go about starting to help address some of these problems when it comes to, as you mentioned, it's not the staff, it's the staffing. It's getting people there who can do this work and keep an eye on these people. people on probation, make sure they're not recommitting crimes?
Well, I think it really probably needs to go back to the courts, and there needs to be a maximum capacity for probation and parole. And if they're at capacity, you can't put people on probation anymore. Maybe that's a thought. I don't know. Maybe that's off the wall. But it seems to me that if you're at capacity, you can't continue to throw more problems at something, and it's only going to make the problem worse. This is a huge problem that they need to address. The probation and parole staff are frustrated, they're afraid to say anything because they work as part of the state government. I think it's necessary for our legislators to take a good hard look at this and what can we do? What other options are available? And what support can we give? We can't just let people out of prison because we don't have room. That has been a theme that I have heard since Governor Evers has been governor, is how can we reduce the population in our prisons? I understand that you want to reform people and get them back out in the community. I'm not opposed to that. And if you can make that happen, and if you can find an evidence-based program that has worked somewhere and not just that somebody has written an article about and claimed that it's evidence-based, if you can find actual good, hard evidence that something's working and we can reduce our population by 9,000 people and people can be productive members of society and not commit crimes, I'm all for it. We don't have that right now, and the plans that the governor has are not going to put us in a good position. My goal here is to make sure that Dodge County remains a safe place. If we release people into the community that shouldn't be released, it's going to make Dodge County a less safe place.
One of those, a part of that plan that the governor proposed is transitioning the Waupun prison into essentially what's termed as a vocational village. Yeah. And maybe I'm going to do a bad job of explaining this, but essentially to gain every day-to-day skills, job, applicable skills that they can then carry over to when they are released from prison and become the hope is a productive member of society. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you feel as? Obviously, there's other components to this plan that would need to be addressed. This is just looking at one specific angle of this plan, but is a vocational village something that you can, something that you would support or think is a good idea?
I think it'd be great. If you can keep inmates occupied and educate them at the same time, you can't not only take care of disciplinary issues within the prison, but you put them in a better position to succeed. I think that's great. I think there's some really good things in this plan, and that's one of them. I think that would be fantastic. But you can't just look at one portion and say, oh, that's really good, and then the rest of the plan, while it may stink, we're going to continue to move ahead with this part of the plan. I think if we can provide opportunity for people who are in the prisons, in the jails, that's a great thing, and we certainly should be looking at that. I would encourage the legislature to continue to keep that as part of a plan, as we continue to try and make things better in our prisons. I know some people have the opinion if you're in prison you should rot and you shouldn't have anything, but part of making sure that you run a good, safe facility is making sure that they have something to do while they're there and making them better. We certainly can do that and should be doing that. But at the same time, we have to make sure that it's still a correctional facility. We should still hold people accountable. And we don't let them out in the streets just because we're running out of room.
And Sheriff, when you made the press conference last year, when you presented a lot of these ideas for helping improve the Department of Corrections and make these changes, a big thing that you were really highlighting on at that point and still to this day is training for Department of Corrections mm-hmm. staff. And is this something that you see addressed in the governor's plan, or you feel like this is something that wasn't really hit on as important as it needs to be able to train these staff on proper ways of standards and accountability to make sure things are done properly in these facilities?
Well, I want to continue to highlight those things because they're important. I don't want them to forget about it. Yeah. I mentioned that I think that Secretary Hoy, while we don't agree on everything, is doing a good job, and he's got his finger on the pulse. I told Secretary Hoy when he took over right after all of this, I told him, right now you are rebuilding the Department of Corrections to a place where it can be respectable. It's going to take some time, and I gave him the analogy of it's like riding a mountain bike up a mountain, and that's what he's doing. So I know he is working on some of those things. I put them in there again because I don't want them to be forgotten. Yeah. I know there's a lot of work to be done. They have a lot of new staff to train, that is challenging, and I don't expect him to have all of those things resolved overnight. But the one thing that I am a little disappointed that we haven't seen yet, or I haven't seen evidence of yet, is the inspections on our prison. balloons. And under under state law, all Wisconsin jails must be inspected by the Department of Corrections. And those inspections are very thorough. Our inspector, Nathan White, I've known, he's been our inspector as long as I've been sheriff, does a great job. He's a stickler, and he finds things that we need to be doing differently and changing. And I appreciate inspections. Some people dread them. I appreciate them because they highlight things that we can improve on. We are not perfect. There's always room for improvement. And we always have a couple things. And we don't have a lot on our inspections that we have to fix. But we always have a couple things that they highlight, which is great because it makes us better. The prisons do not have that mandate. They do not have a required inspection on their facilities. And that was evident by what we saw in our investigations. There were so many forms that were not being filled out, so many things that happened that weren't being taken care of, water that was turned off that nobody even knew the water was off. It wasn't documented. And it was really disheartening. And it falls on the warden of every facility to make sure that their operations operate at peak efficiency. Well, if the Department of Corrections is inspecting all 71 jails, Menominee doesn't have one, so there's 71 jails. Why are they not inspecting the prisons and making sure that they're following through with the same standards that we have to set, that we have set for us? I would like to see the legislature implement that, change it that it's not up to the warden. It's a state standard, and that is one of the requests that I really would like to see happen. Every single prison is inspected, and then every year, the Department of the Secretary of the Department of Corrections files those inspection reports with the state legislature so they can see that there are issues and what those issues are from year to year and are they being rectified. I think that's very important. And it should start tomorrow. It should not start when legislation takes place. It needs to start immediately because I think that would be very helpful to everybody in identifying the deficiencies. And outside of the building portion of it, I think that is the number one thing that Department of Corrections should do to make themselves better.
It's, excuse me, that's a good topic to bring up for our guest tomorrow on Community Comment. State Representative Mark Bourne will join us then, so I'm sure I'll do my best to remember to bring that up tomorrow and have that be a topic of conversation during our Community Comment program tomorrow. But today we are with Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt here on Community Comment this afternoon. And before we wrap up today's program, I want to spend a few minutes pointing out a recent recognition the agency received just a couple of weeks ago, I believe it was. There was a press release sent out involving an internet crimes against children arrest, the multiple arrests made throughout the community through long investigations, I'm sure. But Sheriff, just talk about essentially this internet crimes against children partnership and the investigations that go on there, and then as well as this recognition that that the agency received.
So internet crimes against children has been something that's been in place, and I want to say it's about 20-some years. And 15 years ago, our agency started a partnership with the Department of Justice here in the state of Wisconsin in being part of their task force. And it's very disheartening that the amount of crimes that are out there, internet crimes against children, working to try and court underage individuals for sexual activity to child pornography. It's amazing what is all out there and the things that come to my detectives. And we typically have, and we've got some movement within our detective bureau, but we typically have three of our staff who are dedicated to those internet crimes against children cases. And we'll get sometimes a couple a week. Sometimes we get more, sometimes we get less, but we've had a number of them. We have highlighted them here over the last couple of years, some of the arrests that we've made. We had a couple of them up in Lamira here recently. And our staff work really, really hard at getting those individuals held accountable. They're not easy cases. A lot of them are difficult. They got to do subpoenas and warrants and things like that to get the evidence they need to prosecute. I'm going to give credit to our district attorney as well. Andrea Will does a fantastic job working with our staff and the amount of cases that we get charged. She's just been doing a phenomenal job. But this all was highlighted in a press release, but then about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I got a letter from the Attorney General's office thanking us for our 15 years of partnership with the Department of Justice in this and all the hard work that our staff do working with their staff. And so we've been working with Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, Attorney General Brad Schimmel, Attorney General Josh Call and their staff. And it has been frustrating work. And I'll tell you that my detectives hate them because they have to review all the material. And it's not fun to watch and look at. But they do that so that we can hold these people accountable, get them off the street, get them behind bars where they belong, get them treatment if they need treatment. But it's rewarding because we get to hold these people accountable and get them off the streets. So pros and cons with it, but we work really hard, and I'm very proud of that Detective Bureau and the work that they do. Our community can be proud of them as well. It's not just ours at the Sheriff's Office. I know that the Beaver Dam PD, Watertown, Waupun, Mayville all have detectives that do this same work. We were honored to be recognized with that 15-year partnership and put that in a frame to go up in the Detective Bureau to remind them that there are people that are very thankful of the work that they're doing.
Yeah, recognition like that is very important, specifically in that type of investigative work. As you mentioned, Sheriff, it is not often talked about because of the subject matter in and of itself. It's very hard for people to bring up the subject. Again, it's challenging even for myself, but and the investigators who work on those cases, I can't imagine the day in and day out of having to review those things. I can speak for myself, I'm sure many people in the community, that they are appreciative of the work that's being done, important work, and it's good to see recognition made like this whenever possible, just because, again, it's an important job to do, but it takes a special person to do this kind of work, I'm sure.
And we have a lot of special people in our Detective Bureau, that's for sure. They wear their hearts on their sleeve, and they work hard to get these cases resolved, and goes along with our theme of this year at the Sheriff's Office, and that's customer service. And whether it be a theft or a burglary or a homicide or a child that's been victimized, we owe it to our community to provide great customer service to hold these people accountable.
With that note, I want to thank our guests here on Community Comment this afternoon, Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt, for joining us here on the program this afternoon. Sheriff, thanks again so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
And that will do it for today's Community Comment.